Director Lisa Rudman, and she does trainings, works with women on giving them the radio production skills, journalism skills, etc. Get the microphone and the tapers in their hands, and produce show segments. A little bit of both, actually. I mean, sometimes we'll work with another station or another community group, over the phone and put someone in touch with another producer or someone who's worked closely with us. So it varies.
Thanks. I'm going to stand up just because it's hard for me to talk sitting down. It's funny because Wings and Making Contact are very similar in certain ways. We both have an hour a week. We both are dealing with similar kinds of issues. And we both probably pay about the same or similarly. But the way we're run is really, really different. Wings is extremely informal in terms of a pitch. You can email. You can phone up. We have an 800 number right now. We're about to move to Canada, so in a few months this may not work. We'll see. 1-800-798-9703. And I've got some cards here with the information, the email and the website will stay the same. The main thing that, I guess I should say first about our format. We're a half hour a week. Sometimes we're in a news format, which was our original format, and sometimes we're in a current affairs format. We used to do 12 newscasts a year, and just for reasons of resources and because I wanted to get out of the house and come to conferences once in a while, it's now become 6 newscasts a year, because when you have 5 or 6 pieces, that's 5 or 6 times as much work as to do a half an hour, really. I mean, it's not that much less work to do a short piece. In fact, sometimes it's more work, depending on what you start with. So anyhow, we have the news format, and those pieces run up to 6.5 minutes long. Sometimes if you've got something longer, I mean, we try to work with you and make it easy for you because we don't pay a whole lot. And all this thing about editing over the phone and stuff like that, I mean, we just don't do it. You send us what you want to send us. Often it's aired somewhere else. We don't require an exclusive. If you want it, you can have as much control over the product as you want. And when you're sick of it, you send it to us, and we'll do whatever we have to do to make it fit. You know, so yeah, we do need good sound, and it's. I mean, sometimes we work with marginal sound, but that's only if it's something we really, really got to have. But it's so much easier to get good sound now with mini discs and whatnot. And if you need any help on, just a lot of informal counseling that goes on in terms of feedback, like you shouldn't have interviewed that woman standing in front of the refrigerator. At least point your mic the other direction. There are some producers' guidelines on the Wings website. They're a little outdated, in particular about equipment, because some of the equipment that we've been recommending is no longer available. The Sony WMD3 is just cassette recorder is no longer available, and the mini disc recorders are disappearing. The models are disappearing so fast that it's hard to say, what to use. I'm hoping things will settle down somehow technologically. The main thing that Wings wants is hot. The thing is that women's information and news has always been associated with slow, boring, static, these kind of things. I mean, women have not been called in to speak on the hot stories, but the fact is that if you look at what women are doing around the world, they're incredible orators. There's all this passion out there, and the passion is what drives the movement. I mean, we were started in 1985, right at the end of the decade for women, when the women's movement had really matured to the point where we had a common global agenda and we could see, as Audre Lorde said, the edge of each other's battles. And so this exists to continue that that vision and to keep what women are doing on the record. I used to be in women's history a few years ago. I worked on the Texas Women's History Project. And I would be so upset because we'd find some little reference to something really exciting that happened, like a laundress's strike in Galveston in 1879. And the only record there would be, in that case, there was a really slanderous article in the Galveston newspaper about this laundress's strike, and there wasn't anything from those women's point of view. I mean, you're lucky even to get a slandering reference. So much has disappeared, and women have really been community builders, have come up, and we're still doing it. We're coming up with ideas. Women have not given up on the future of society and the world, you know, and we want to kind of keep track of what's going on and try to get that information out. So actually, we give an award every year. It's the Catherine Davenport Award for Women's News. It's named after the late co-founder of Wings, and it's an award for the hottest women's radio news story of the year. And by hot, we mean that, you know, it's timely, it's new, and it has passion. And Mariah Gallardon won, I think she won the first year that we had it, actually, for her story about the Levi Strauss laid-off workers from San Antonio going to San Francisco and calling out the president of the company by his first name and telling him not to, you know, that he was going to get, it was Christmas time, that he was going to get sticks and coal in his sock for the way he treated people. I mean, it was just really, it had everything. It was, and she also interviewed somebody, a flack from the company, who gave their really idiotic rationale and made a fool of himself. So, you know, it was a really great story. Anyway, so that's what we're looking for. We do a lot with speeches. I mean, if you record a really hot speech, now it used to be that we would just take the raw tape, and we still do sometimes, like, take the raw tape, and either I edit it or I pass it on to Kelly Ramirez or some of the other editors that do things with Wings. We are looking for editors, too, you know, people who can take that raw tape that somebody hadn't got time to cut down. But if you can cut it down, we'll pay more. Not enough more to make it worth it, but still. And we like it's the sound of the interaction between the person and the audience. You know, you just get a lot more passion. But we use a lot of speeches. We use extended interviews. We use documentaries. We just got from Susan Wood in New York a great documentary about the Children's Summit that was held at the UN and how disgraceful the way the U.S. behaved and sending the most ideological right-wing religious people to be delegates at that conference who were, in the face of the AIDS epidemic, were saying abstinence only, you know, as if these young women had a choice about whether they were going to have sex with these guys. And anyway, so you get the idea of what it is. Let me just see if there's anything else. Okay, need editors, tech quality, yes. And I mean, intelligibility has always got to be the first criterion. And so, I mean, I assume that people are listening to this show on a lot of radio stations that have very low power, so the reception is marginal anyway. They're listening in automobiles. They're listening while they're doing the dishes. We've got to have clarity. And let's see. I guess, and ready to mix, same fee as already mixed. But again, we don't require an exclusive. If you've got something and you think that would be of interest for us, call up, email, tell me about it. I'll listen to it. I'll try to put it into the schedule. And sometimes we can't use it. You know, I try not to make a definite commitment to something unless I'm willing to pay for it, you know, even if I can't use it. But the selection process has to do with diversity, which includes diversity of voices, of sources, of geography, and of story types. And it's very broad, you know, like we're interested in war and peace and economics and reproductive rights issues and sexuality and just, you know, great new ideas that somebody might have for how things fit together. There's a lot there. So I think, in the half hours, our total time is 29 minutes. The minimum that we need for our Wings music and outro is 1 minute. So your actual content can't go over 8 minutes. But one of my best skills is cutting out ums, and so at 28, I'm sorry, over 28. So if it runs 29 or 30, I consider that to be, you know, it's not that big of a task to tweak it a little. And we generally have this piece that I've got to play is an old piece that's been reissued, so it doesn't have this. But usually we have a tease now before the Wings music. And if you want to identify what you think is the tease, I try to have in the tease whatever It's kind of a combination of what will sum up the character of the piece, but also what's the main point that if people listened for 30 seconds and said, nah, you know, they get it, you know? So anyway, that's my pitch. Thanks. Yeah. The 800 is 1-800-798-9703. We sometimes use audio from men, but we are trying to prioritize getting women on the air. It's been kind of a deficit. So, Yusef, you'd have to be twice as good as a woman, you know, to get on. I mean, it's sort of a reverse of the old thing. I'm sorry. What? Huh? Well, all right. We don't use many. Sorry, what was that you were going to say?
Well, I was just thinking of possibilities of some sort of radio barricade thing that didn't have a man's voice, but it's still produced by a man.
The most often, the thing we use most often for men is their recordings of speeches, you know, and because you may have access to somebody that comes through your town, you know, and especially interested in women from outside the U.S. Yeah. Okay.
Hello. I'm Aaron Glantz, and I'm one of the producers of Free Speech Radio News. And we're not quite as together as the National Radio Project in having guidelines, but I promise that we will soon. And we have one of our reporters, our Washington reporter, Josh Chaffin, who's currently drawing them up. So probably in a month or two, if you ask for them, we should have them. But basically, you know, for those of you who are familiar with Free Speech Radio News, it's a daily progressive national news broadcast. There's little green flyers over there that describe it, but it came out of a strike by reporters against Pacifica Network News during the problems at Pacifica. And what we did was we tried to use that as an opportunity to reformulate the way the news was produced at Pacifica Network News beyond the issues that were at stake in our strike. And so what that meant was that whereas Pacifica Network News was produced by a staff in Washington, D.C., with only occasional freelance stories, maybe one of the five stories every day would be a freelance story, most of them would be produced out of Washington, what Free Speech Radio News is really dedicated to is getting on community voices from all around the country and the world. And in our mission statement is a preference for first-person narratives over professional analysts and politicians. Although some stories do... We frequently find ourselves putting the President of the United States on the radio because he says such ridiculous things on such a regular basis, and we just can't help ourselves. That's right. So, for example, you know, we have been trying to get a lot of stories about the assault on civil liberties and just try to document many of the individual cases. And Scott Gurian, who is here, you know, has been doing a lot of that coverage from the Middlesex County Jail in New Jersey, where the government says there are 74 detainees, but the Center for Constitutional Rights says it's representing like 1,000 detainees. So, I don't know what happened to the other 900 people. Maybe they just disappeared. So trying to get their stories, their individual stories out to explain to people what is happening and cut through the rhetoric. We have 5 minutes of news headlines at the top of the show, which are produced by Randy Zimmerman at WMNF in Tampa, Florida. And you can contact her if you're interested in a headline by calling MNF, or you can call me and get her information. And that's just like what is the latest and greatest, and each of those are about 45 seconds to a minute long. If you go over a minute, she will be absolutely merciless because she's only got five to work with, and we want to get like five stories in there. On the radio, breaking news from across the country and around the world. And then we have 22 minutes of longer stories where we try to run between 4 and 6 stories. And those range in length from 2 minutes on the short side to 6 minutes on the long side. And people who turn in 6-minute stories should be prepared for me to sit on them because it's just really hard to put them on the radio because it means that if anything happens, we have to put them off to make space. But, you know, sometimes if you do have a story and you want to use a lot of sound and it can hold, you know, it's really exciting. But unfortunately, because we came out of a strike against Pacifica and because Pacifica is now bankrupt, we don't pay so much. We pay $150 for a feature report, either, you know, news feature or kind of evergreen feature. And we pay $20 for a news headline. I would say that we want to try to get as many grassroots voices on the radio. I mentioned that, and then the other thing is that one thing that makes free speech radio news different, I think, than a lot of news outlets is that we want to give the reporter space to tell the story in the way that they see it from the ground. And one of the things that I've taken a great deal of pride in as a producer is, for example, in our Afghanistan coverage or in our Middle East coverage, having a number of reporters report on the same issue who share very different but progressive perspectives. You know, so we've had Jeremy Scahill and Fariba Nawa and Prothap Chatterjee all reporting on Afghanistan, and they all have very different interpretations of the events there, and they're all true, and none of them are being covered by the corporate press. So if you want to, when you're thinking about a story, there are a couple of things to think about. The first thing to think about is that we're a news program, which means that although we do run some kind of more behind the news kind of stuff, usually we can't put that many of it on because we want to find out like what's going on now, and trying to find grassroots ways of telling people about many of the fights that are going on. So Melinda Tuhus is here, and she's working on a story. Hi, Melinda. She's working on a story right now on Connecticut's budget and how the state budget of Connecticut has been cut because they would rather cut social programs than tax millionaires in Connecticut. And it's a national story. So that's exactly the point. Is that it's perfect because it's something that is happening at the grassroots, but it's universal. So as someone in Colorado, you would be interested in knowing what's happening in Connecticut because you're facing much the same thing. And so, you know, taking this budget fight, but instead of just covering the Democrats say this, the Republicans say that, going in and saying, well, what are the social programs being cut, and documenting the effects of those social programs on regular people. We try to have pretty quick turnaround on stories, but you know, things are pretty flexible. We try to move things around as much as possible to make everything work out. The phone, just call or pitch. And then you want to have multiple voices in your story. Sometimes people will submit a script and they'll interview and they'll have four cuts from the same person, and that's not so desirable. And try to interview people who share different perspectives on the issue. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have to interview the quote-unquote other side. But what it does mean is that, stories will often have many different sides, you know. So if you could interview someone, if you're doing the detainee story, you can interview someone from, like, the legal perspective. You could interview, like, some families of detainees and interview, you know, some people in the community that wonder what happened to these people that they used to see all the time. And so that way you don't need to get the other side, but the story is much richer from having heard these different perspectives. And then I just wanted to introduce John Hamilton. I don't know if you mind us putting you on the spot, but John also produces a program that pays money to reporters.
Thanks. Well, I am on the spot. But, I'm John Hamilton. I produce a program called the Workers Independent News Service. We also produce feature stories very similar to Free Speech Radio news segments, and, in fact, we often share our stories across platforms. And we also do headlines, much like Free Speech Radio does. So I have some brochures over here, and I'll pass those. Yeah, I'll pass them around. Hold on.
Can I ask about an acronym question? I don't is NRP a deliberate?
No, I mean, some people would say it's sort of a deliberate mistake.
mistake in some ways, but no, it's not. It wasn't consciously done as such. All right. Oh, that's okay. Yeah.
I don't think it's necessary for the home viewer.
Well, I know we're recording this. Just another quick word about WINS. So obviously we're focused on issues that affect working people. We focus, I wouldn't say primarily on United States labor issues, although, well, okay, primarily. But we're certainly looking to expand our international coverage as well. And these are issues that affect not only people in labor unions, although we certainly focus our attention very much on organized labor, but also issues that affect the unemployed and the homeless, people on welfare, issues that might be labor issues a little more subtly. And we like to, the way I see it, when working people in this country are mentioned in the press, it's either because there was a, you know, like a mass layoff, or you know because there was some calamity like the coal miners, but it's very rare that that working people are presented in a way that's in which they're not just simply a statistic, you know, 17,000 at WorldCom. What we want to do is we want to find those workers at WorldCom and talk to them and get their story out there and put a face to the statistic and get their story out. So the brochures are going around. There's contact information, and I'll encourage everyone to contact us at WINS, and we'd be very interested in hearing your pitches as well. Yeah, question.
What do you pay, and do you like barter for receiving WINS?
We haven't done barter. We've been talking about doing barter. Because we are a subscription-based service, there's a small weekly fee to subscribe to WINS. Well, barter would be, for example, trading a subscription for, producing segments. Yeah, that's definitely something that we could entertain, and feel free to give us a call anytime. The contact information is in the brochure. We don't pay quite as much as Free Speech Radio News because we're, chronically underfunded. But the nice thing is, a lot of the time, our stories are pitched to Aaron, and quite often he'll run them as well. And in that case, you get paid twice, so it's very lucrative for you. And WINS. And Philip as well, I'm sure in certain cases. I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, actually, we offer three different things. One is a 30-second spot that goes out daily, which is our economic news report. It's called the Dow Bob Report. We've all heard of the Dow Jones. Well, this is the Dow Bob. And it's economic statistics about the economy that with a worker's perspective. So, we're just about to get on the KU satellite. Right now, we only distribute over the internet as downloadable MP3 files, but we should be on KU very soon. So, just to finish answering your first question, the second thing is we have a 3-minute headline news package, and that's a daily service. And then we have the feature stories available on a regular basis as well, and those are sort of a la carte, so you can pick them and drop them into your regular newscast. Okay.
I just wanted to talk for a moment about the different types of reporters who work for Free Speech Radio News, and I think that it's an interesting thing to think about because it can be helpful to people in terms of figuring out where they fit in the mix. We have people who are volunteers in newsrooms at community radio stations who file. And for them, I think it's an opportunity to get paid for the work that they're doing as a volunteer at the community radio station when the story that they're covering comes to national prominence. Then we have reporters who are full-time independent journalist freelancers. And that's that. Those are the people who probably call John and me and Philip and Frida all in the same story, and maybe also try to write it in a newspaper or a magazine, and that's something to definitely think about if you're trying to make it as a freelancer is picking stories that might have multiple angles for multiple outlets, and you know, even though John and I share a lot back and forth in terms of Between Winds and Free Speech Radio News, I'm sure Philip, you know, has kind of a different perspective where they really want to be covering like similar issues, but they don't want to be presenting like the same exact information. So coming up with different angles on the stories that you're reporting so that you can maybe do a bunch of interviews, but you know, kind of sell different aspects of the story to different news outlets. We also work with journalists who have full-time jobs at NPR stations and international radio news services like Radio France International and the BBC. And a lot of these people are people who find themselves in the corporate media, and they come along stories all the time that they don't have the opportunity to tell or don't have the opportunity to tell the way they want to tell them, but they can tell them on Free Speech Radio News. If you're thinking of like going somewhere on a trip to do reporting, you should definitely call. And in that case, one thing that I try to do is hook people up with other people who they might be able to write for, because we can only pay like a $200 travel stipend for reporters on assignment. But you know, if you were going to Afghanistan, it might cost you more than $200 to get there. So yeah, just a little bit. So Jeremy's experienced at stretching our extremely small stipends and then turning things around, so you might have some great insight into that. But yeah, we don't pay that much in terms of stories and stipends, so it's all about just kind of hooking up and, you know, finding other ways to pay. So, and maybe that can segue into what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, one thing that we do, I didn't mention anything about pay because it's I wish we could pay more, actually. Yeah, we pay similar rates. We pay $175 for a story that runs about 7 to 10 minutes. Sometimes we take shorter pieces. On occasion, we'll pay a little bit less, about $150 for about a 5 to 6 minute piece. We also pay for raw tape as well. So if someone submits raw tape and we use it, we pay $50 per speaker, a maximum of $100 per show. And occasionally we take shorter things than that, but usually it's either raw tape, full feature, 7 to 10 minutes, and or the shorter version. I try to help out because I used to freelance a lot, and I still do some freelance work, so I know what it's like to be busting it really hard and, you know, turning in your story, and, you know, thanks for the $175. That works out to like what, like $1.05 per hour or something. So we try to handle things like the final mix, and, you know, and another thing that we do that I also see as sort of payback to people working really hard for us, but also is another part of our overall media strategy, is try to push people's work out to other outlets. And so on occasion we'll get a story in that'll be somewhat of an exclusive or a breaking story, or just a really fascinating angle or hard to get interview. It'll be well written, well crafted, and it'll look like, well, this is something you should really push out there and take a little bit further. And since I have a fair amount of experience doing freelance work with the different outlets, I'll try to give you know, a correspondent some advice on how to do that, and really encourage them, you know, to go ahead and make that call to say the NPR Washington desk, you know, or make a call to the Progressive magazine or In These Times or Pacific News Service, and try to get your story in either a print form or try to do another radio version of this, call Marketplace. You know, there's lots of other national news outlets that, you know, sometimes we overlook. You know, we just sort of like throw them either in a heap of like, you know, they're like, you know, the mainstream, so forget it. Or, you know, isn't it like impossible to get published by Mother Jones? Well, yeah, it's hard. It's really, really hard to get it. But one thing that we try to do, and it's part of our training, is really encourage people to start you know, trying to make some inroads. You know, it never hurts to make a phone call. It never hurts to get a query letter together, and fax something in, follow up with a phone call. People start recognizing your name the next time you call. You end up, you know, gaining some courage points, you know, because it does take a lot to sort of say, you know, get the Washington desk of NPR, and they're running a mile a minute. You know, what do you got for me? They're not, you know, always super friendly. You know, they don't have a lot of time. You know, they need to know what you're talking about right away. You know, they don't have, you know, time for like a 25-minute conversation. You really need to be prepared, and it takes, you know, a few times to really kind of get in a rhythm and feel comfortable with that sort of thing. So we've had some luck, you know, pushing some people's work out there, and it's good for the journalists, you know, they get their work out there, they get more money, they work for other outlets that'll pay a little bit more for their work, and I see it again as part of our media strategy, because we all work really hard as producers, and I have John and others at our radio stations, to heighten people's awareness and their political consciousness about their journalism, you know. And it's not an easy process sometimes, you know. A lot of people come our way and they haven't really thought about consolidation of media and what that means for the political landscape in the country, or bias in the corporate media, or censorship in the corporate media, and how important community radio is. And so we spend a lot of time educating people, having long conversations. And so we hope that once they've gone through all that, you know, they're like a seed. They can go, you know, work for wherever, you know, a newspaper, an NPR station, wherever, and start spreading the word. And so we feel that that's really important as well.
I wouldn't mind. I don't know if you're addressing it to somebody in particular, but this is an issue that I've been following for a while, and it's a very important, you might even say, hot issue among independent producers who are station-based. And the policies vary in different stations. Basically, in terms of ownership of a piece of work, in the overall legal framework, the first person who puts it in a tangible medium is de facto the copyright owner. And unless they are paid to do that, in which case they become, they're doing work for hire. And so in the case of community stations, there's a gray area there. Often stations, I know the Pacifica stations have done this, and some of the other stations will have a volunteer agreement that you have to sign that says that anything you produce at the station belongs to the station. And then the station can, at like WORT, you have to ask the general manager or somebody if you can distribute the story, and then they'll say yes or no, and they'll say whether they expect to get money out of it or not. So there's a lot of different arrangements that are made, but that's the framework.
Just to spin off of that a little bit, and just say that at Free Speech Radio News, we will pay like a community radio station, or more likely an IMC, for a story, because they tend to be very collective sometimes, but only when the person who did the story suggests it. you know, and that, you know, because what we don't want, because we're a collective of independent journalists, but, you know, sometimes it's the wish of the, you know, the reporter will say, I'd like the Independent Media Center to get this check, you know, because it will help pay for this to the IMC, and that's the agreement that we all have, so that's what we do then. We're in the process. Free Speech Radio News is a worker collective. All the reporters who report for the newscast and have filed at least three stories are the boss. And so we are in the process of, you know, researching, trade union affiliation. And one of the benefits of that is that, that hopefully we'll be able to stick up for our members if the evil community radio stations try to jerk them out of their money.
Yeah, we know. I want to say a couple words about the format of the segments for our program, because it's different than the format, say, that some people may be used to for filing news stories. What drives our segments and stories are the voices that are in the stories. And so we try to minimize the amount of narration or script writing that we're going to do for the story, and try to have speakers really tell their stories. And so that means that we don't have a lot of short sound bites. So it's not, you know, 20-second blips here and there and 30-second blips here and there of someone, you know, stating, you know, a couple of pithy sentences. We generally tend to let people speak, you know, and make complete, clear ideas. So that means like a minute and a half, 2 minutes long of someone talking, you know, which is sometimes difficult for some people to get into. It seems like atrociously long, especially if you're really used to working on, you know, cutting things down. And so that's one thing to keep in mind. I actually have a small sample that I wanted to play just to give an idea of how that sounds. One nice thing about that from the producer standpoint, as far as, you know, weighing the economic realities, is that, you know, the longer the tape cuts are, the less script writing you have to do, which could mean the less work. So
it's more work to write a short script.
Yeah, could be. So let me cue something up, and if someone else wants to say something while I'm doing that, then
I just wanted to say on this thing about stations, I forgot to mention that WORT, I think they have a standard agreement that if you have permission to distribute it, you pay 10% of the fee to the station. And that's what Western Public Radio, when I worked there, they had an affiliation fee to use the studio, but you also paid 10% of your income from working there.
Actually, I think it's half, but nobody ever really abides by it.
Who? At Western Public Radio is supposed to be half?
WRT.
Oh, WRT is supposed to be half? Oh, I see.
It's
I beg your
to be
pardon.
Half, but I don't think anyone actually follows that.
Oh, well, isn't that nice?
I shouldn't say that, but
You're probably right. I mean, I've probably misremembered it by confusion with something else. Sorry. Yeah. You ready?
Yeah. Okay, so this is just the first part of a show we did on genetic contamination of corn crops in Mexico. And, why don't you go ahead and, hit pause.
I'm Philip Babbage, your host this week on Making Contact, an international radio program.
By the way, this is not a good example of how we want our narration done. I was like really tired. I recorded this like at 5:30 in the morning, so I sound a little bit low level.
Yeah.
All right. I get a little leeway sometimes.
Do you want more or what do you want?
No, go ahead and play there. Yeah, it'll be over.
I'm seeking to create connections between people, vital ideas, and important information. Virtually no one disputes the possibility that pollen from genetically engineered corn crops could inadvertently mingle with natural varieties and pass on manufactured traits. Professor Michael Freeling is acutely aware of the plausibility of this scenario. He covers the ears of his experimental crops with paper bags to protect them from unwanted pollination. Freeling is a professor of genetics in the Department of Plant Biology at the University of California, Berkeley. He was among a group of scientists who published a critique in the distinguished magazine Nature that disputed two conclusions the publication released in its November 29, 2001 edition. Two researchers, also from UC Berkeley, had reported then that corn crops in the southern Mexican state of Oaxaca had become contaminated with transgenic material. Moreover, David Quist and Ignacio Chapella said in their Nature article that genes from bioengineered corn could unpredictably mix with other corn varieties. Freeling explains.
One is that transgenes from corn developed by the Novartis Corporation found their way into land races, and that's corn grown by indigenous peoples for special purposes. So it got out of corn that was grown in Mexico for food purposes and got into races. That's number one, that there was contamination, and number two, that once this transgene got into that corn, that it jumped around in an unexpected way, doing unexpected things. One of those conclusions is not supported at all by their own data, and that's the second one. And the first one may or may not be, and in any case, the paper was reviewed so many times by so many people, it was published, and finally Nature asked them to retract. They didn't retract, and that's where it stands.
The journal Nature agreed and essentially retracted the Quist and Chappella article, stating, quote, "The evidence available is not sufficient to justify the publication of the original paper." That wasn't the end of the story, though. The findings by Chappella and Quist were particularly alarming because they discovered transgenic contamination in an area where corn was first domesticated from the wild grass Teosinte thousands of years ago. In spring 2002, Chappella returned to the small mountain village of Kapulaupam, where he and Quist had initially collected the samples they tested for their study. He points out some of the qualities of native or criollo corn.
So this is a field of criollo corn, and criollo corn is not a variety. A variety is something that you select and narrow down the genetic basis of so that you can have a very, very homogeneous type of plant. What you have here is a diversity of genotypes that are particularly selected to this specific plot, this specific field, and will be different from the very diverse also variety that would be grown in the field next door. So this is the basis of the generation and the maintenance of diversity. I think often people make the mistake of believing that farmers here should be held to the same standards as farmers in Iowa, who are producing biomass for the world. They're feeding the world in biomass. Some of the corn in Iowa is being turned into alcohol to be burned. Some of the corn in Iowa is being turned into just syrup for, you know, sodas or whatever. And some people say that the farmers here should be held to the same economic standard. And I think that's a big mistake.
All right, so longer cuts, people talking, we actually hear their ideas, they, you know, develop their ideas. I'm going to give credit to Claire Cummings, a really great journalist and producer. She's also an attorney for Tape in Mexico. She's the one who went down to Mexico with Chappella and interviewed indigenous farmers down there as well. And Poppy Burke, one of our associate producers, was the co-producer of this show as well. So just an example there. That piece, the whole half hour is that subject. So that's one of our documentary formats.
So y'all have a really, like on story by story, you have a collaborative going on with different people's input. And you're the final editor, but you're recruiting their input for the pieces.
That's right. Yeah, one thing that about the way that we work, and we worked with Frida a lot in as well, is that we're collaborative in that you know, we oftentimes don't have someone set off and sort of working, you know, in their own sort of, you know, situation. We have people, you know, talking, and oftentimes we'll put one of our producers or correspondents in touch with one of our advisors or someone we suggest they talk to for background on a particular story. So it's oftentimes a very much a group effort. And, you know, in this particular case, I was, you know, managing the collaborative effort and then did some of the interviews. I interviewed Freeling and did some of the research on this as well and some of the script writing as well. But oftentimes it's a collaborative effort. Yes.
Okay, I have a couple questions. First one is, can you talk about who are your funders and if you have to adhere to any guidelines such as like language or like radical content or whatnot? And also, do you have like staff reporters or stringers, and how does that come about if you do?
I got this hot question. Wait, are you ready? Okay. Who are our funders? Wings is funded about one-third by station support, and we have kind of a sliding scale. Somebody referred to it yesterday as a shareware concept, where the stations that have income and can afford to pay the full fee, which is $394 a year, but then there's a sliding scale, and it's all based on whether they pay in advance or, you know, anyway, there's different things. And then that's like the main rate. Then there's another rate that we charge for the stations that can only afford to just defray our cost of sending it to them. And then some stations get it for nothing because they don't have anything, you know, and it's like shareware concept. So anyway, that happens. And But that comes to about a third of our budget. Our total budget is only about $36,000 a year. And that includes other tape sales are also included in that. And then, and also services that we provide, like conference courting for National Women's Studies Association, all that's our earned income stream. Then the other two-thirds is coming from grant funding. We have now kind of a pool of near spontaneous or near spontaneous funders who'll send us anywhere from $2,000, from $200 a year on up to, there's a couple of family foundations that are associated with Genevieve Vaughn and her family that we're getting $15,000 to $20,000 a year from those two foundations. In terms of restrictions, must be radical. I don't feel constrained in any way. I think that the people who fund us are very much in harmony with the way that we're thinking.
Yeah.
Oh, 1-800-798-9703. That's the Wings 800 number. Oh, the staff reporters. Oh, sorry. I guess I'm the only long-term staff reporter. People come and go. They come and go. I mean, right now in Austin, Stacy Pettigrew, whom you may have met, she was here yesterday. She and another woman named Bracken Firecracker live in a commune or a collective warehouse in Austin, and they do all kinds of interesting radical things like radical cheerleaders and stuff, and they've gotten very interested in radio, and they're coming over regularly, like Bracken when she's in town, which is not always happening. She's in Cuba or someplace. She tries to come in at least one day a week, but, you know, she sets that requirement herself. I mean, there's nobody who's actually salaried to do that kind of thing, but, I mean, to the extent that people work more, then they become more closely affiliated. And I just recently, Kelly Ramirez has been doing a lot of work, including providing a website for us to FTP stuff around the world. Said she wanted to be an associate producer. I said, yes, okay. So she's an associate producer. I sent her a lot of editing work. And I mean, she's a hard worker, and she comes through and she gets the job done. And I really appreciate her a lot.
Let's see, funders, Chevron, Monsanto, National Rifle Association, Department of Defense. We have no corporate funding. We are 70% funded by individual contributors, actually. So individual listeners, supporters. We do regularly apply for grants from some foundations, and we get some of those as well, and that makes up about another 30%. And we have a few major donors, people who provide, a little bit more than the smaller amounts. But 70% individual contributors, which in the nonprofit world is very good. That's very, very excellent. So it keeps us really free and liberated in lots of ways. Our content isn't influenced in any way by any of our donors. I mean, we get some phone calls. I'd say that the one issue that's most controversial that I've heard the most, the strongest critique from some of our supporters has to do with our Israeli-Palestinian coverage. So, but it hasn't affected what we've done. You know, it just means that we engage in conversations with people who support our work and want to know why we, had a particular angle on the issue, et cetera. So it doesn't affect our work overall, though. Staff and reporters, we have producers on staff. Right now we have one associate producer, like I said before, I'm the managing producer. So we're the two people in our production department. We've got three people in our administrative program department. They handle all the administrative functions of the organization and keep it rolling, and they also handle our distribution as well. When we take on special programs, we just got done doing a special series called Beyond Headlines. We hired new people on. We had another associate producer added to our staff and a technical coordinator. When we did LiveWire Independent News, the daily news series and the pilot for it in 2001, we hired on two staff reporters, but one of our interns turned into a staff reporter, basically. She's working really hard and doing great work.
What's the other 30% beyond the 30%
foundations? Foundations, exactly.
We get almost all of our money from radio stations now. We used to, when we were on strike, get most of our money from individuals. But now we're kind of rethinking things and, first of all, trying to get the money that used to fund Pacifica Network News to go to fund us, because, you know, affiliate stations are still paying for Pacifica Network News even though it doesn't exist. So that's kind of the lion's share of our funding. And then a lot of these questions that you raise, we're just starting to grapple with because they're just starting to become issues. And if you report for Free Speech Radio News, then you can join the steering committee and help decide those sorts of things. we do have in our bylaws that a clause against any money from corporations or their evil extensions. I don't know exactly what the language is. But we are also going over our bylaws right now, and if you report for Free Speech Radio News and want to participate in the drafting of those bylaws, you're more than welcome to, and you should come talk to me later. The way in which the staff versus freelance works is that all of the staff of Free Speech Radio News, myself and Randy Zimmerman, the headlines producer, and Jade Pedgett-Seekins, the technical producer, and Deepa, our host, and then the technical assistant, which is currently Nell Geiser, is all involved in facilitating stories getting on the radio. And even Deepa, who sometimes does stories in her position as host, is actually paid separately when she does stories. That's not part of her job description. She pitches stories just like any other freelance reporter. So it's a different business model from the staff reporter model, because the idea is very community-based to get as many different people telling stories as possible in the small space that we have available.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
I'm Jeremy Scahill from Free Speech Radio News, .. One of the things in this whole discussion that you asked about staff reporters, that one of the lessons I think we learned from what happened at PNN, at Pacifica Network News, and I worked for PNN at the beginning of 98. I was down there for a couple of months as a sort of substitute full-time reporter. And what I noticed is that the people that actually were official staff reporters there had become so incredibly lazy and dependent on think tank BS on the telephone because of the security of their position. And there was no way that they could be removed, and they were doing garbage, and then they increasingly moved to the right, and then they were fighting each other for the Financial Newswire. I think one of the strengths of, it's a two-edged sword. It would be nice to be able to give people benefits, which is a major problem for, I think, many of the people at this conference, you know, struggling to provide, make a living, support families, have health care. But if you step away from those issues for a moment and look at it as a family of people contributing to Free Speech Radio News or the National Radio Project or Wings or, and, you know, independent media centers where you don't get paid, I think the strength is in the decentralization of things. And one of the things I like very much about Free Speech Radio News up till now is that reporters are allowed to be reporters, and Aaron has been very good at not censoring people or trying to twist them into a sort of monotonous existence as reporters. And you know, that was not the case at Pacifica Network News by any means. Everyone was sort of encouraged to sound pretty much the same. And I think that the diversity that you hear in the cast, you hear, for instance, our correspondent Sam in Nigeria, you hear that he is not from America and he is not from Britain. You know, reporters, Raphael Kraft, who was in the West Bank, yes, maybe it's sometimes difficult to hear, you know, to understand exactly what he's saying because he does have somewhat of a heavy French accent, but the reports he was doing were fantastic and very much under the gun. And I think that that's our strength. And so as we move toward dealing with the question of a larger national news network, for lack of a better term, and I know Philip has worked really hard in trying to facilitate this dialogue for a number of years on what really would be an important component to all of our radio lineups, having some kind of a national network, I think we need to keep in mind all of these models, what's succeeded and what's failed, And, you know, I like very much the idea, as we move forward with this discussion, of having, if there is a collective news, whether it's Free Speech Radio News and turning into something else or a whole new creation, of distributing the wealth, so to speak, of jobs, not to have a top-down thing of the news editor, the producer, the assistant editor, but to have reporters on a retainer system, where reporters are given a little bit of pocket money just for being there and available. For a reporter in Africa or someone living, you know, in Central or Southern Europe, $300 a month can go a long way and can incur and make you feel like you're a part of something, and it shows appreciation in addition to then getting paid for your pieces. Instead of loading top heavy with producers and things, you could have coordinators, someone who's dealing with Global South issues, someone who's dealing with things pertaining to the Middle East, or just a crisis producer, someone who's dealing with whatever the breaking news is, you know, someone who's doing national slash features, you know, and having it be spread out more and not all centered in Washington or not all centered in New York. These could be people. I think also one of the shortfalls of community media, we need to have people who are working for community radio in the U.S. in other parts of the world as coordinators too, not just reporting from places, but trying to hunt down and find other people. So anyway,
I think that's great, and it seems so at odds with Philip's style when you think of, oh, it's long-term planning, but obviously a news show and a week, half-hour weekly show is a completely different animal, and for providing news, that model sounds so incredibly flexible and able to respond to things, and really, yeah.
But I think, I mean, not to sort of bogart the ceremony, but I think that, I mean, one of the great things about the way that the National Radio Project, as it exists right now, I mean, there was this pilot of LiveWire News, and one of the coolest things about it was the headlines were on a rotating system, and sometimes they, you know, they were a little bit, but sometimes they were fantastic, and you got a sense for a lot of the different forces that are involved with that collaborative project. And, you know, I mean, I think there are things that are being done in bits and pieces around the country that, if put together with some kind of cohesion, would create a really great collective newscast, in addition to all the great things that we already have. Anyway, I'll stop talking, but...
Yeah, well, thanks. Yeah, exactly, yeah. So we had, we sort of did an amalgam of the different sort of structures of ways of organizing. So headlines, the headline segment was produced by four different groups, the Boston Community Reporters Project, I remember all of them right now, Tampa, exactly. Yeah, Ward, exactly. Thank you. And IMC. There we go. Good. Okay. Yeah. So we had four different groups handling the headlines, and so that was one aspect of the collaborative effort that we were engaged in. You know, I think that Free Speech Radio News's idea of giving stipends to the regular stringers is excellent. It's a really, really good idea. I think it needs to be some sort of combination. You know, one thing that I've really learned being part of an organization, starting from like nothing and going up to like a little bit more than nothing, is that you need people who deal with the infrastructure and deal with the sort of overall vision of what the organization is trying to accomplish and the overall progression and how all the pieces fit together. And so so I agree, you know, we certainly don't want to be looking for some model that is extremely top-heavy in that regard. But at the same time, it does take some effort to keep track of everything, you know, and be able to fit everything together. When it comes to the question of reporters, you know, one thing that I found as being a producer of the show is that you wanted to have some sort of safety net for your show in general. You know, I mean, if you're meeting, you know, a daily schedule and deadlines, you want to have people who are there and part of your core team who are able to, you know, work on stories, turn them around for you, perhaps work on a longer sort of schedule and be there to jump in right away, you know, if we need something, you know, immediately or within the next hour or something. So I thought it was good to have a combination of staff reporters. The other thing is that, you know, I think that one thing that's different about the National Radio Project, you know, we do the weekly half-hour show Making Contact, It's Not News, and we you know, take on special series and programs, is that we have a particular set of perspectives that we're trying to get across in our work, and I think that we're much more intentional as far as from an editorial standpoint, and that's really clear, I think, with people people or to people who work with us on a regular basis. And you know, just like other publications and newspapers and whatnot, that, you know, there is a clear sort of editorial perspective that the publication is trying to get across. And so we also too have an editorial perspective that we lay out clearly in our guidelines and we lay out in our work and everything. So I think that takes, you know, that's why we have sort of a layer of editing and producing and that sort of thing.
First of all, I know that David Barsamian says he's always looking for audio also of just raw clips of speeches if they're at least an hour in length. I think he pays about $100 or so. Also, I wanted to ask Jeremy a bit if you could speak a little bit about your experience maybe freelancing for other places, being a foreign correspondent and piecing together little bits from working here and there. I don't know if you have anything to say.
Well, I mean, far and away, the most pleasant things I've done have been for Free Speech Radio News, LiveWire News, Democracy Now! I've worked for the BBC, but because I'm an American, they won't let me work for BBC News. So I do cultural programming, and actually they pay extraordinarily well. They pay £350, which is like, I don't know, $500 for like a 4-minute piece. You know, something that you can turn around if your experience, you could turn that around in a day, and it's, you know, it's fairly good. And then you can sell it other places. But the thing I was talking to Philip about this the other day, if you're depending on these kinds of strings to make a living, You inevitably have to get caught in the daily grind of trying to do as many reports as you can to just make ends meet. You know, when I went to Iraq in May and June, Free Speech Radio News was able to kick in on the plane ticket and for some expenses, but my plane ticket was only $300 round trip to Jordan because I live in Belgrade. So, you know, there were minimal expenses there. And then I paid a lot of stuff out of pocket and had to then sort of scramble, you know, to make back what I had put into it, to even sort of break even on it. And it's really a challenge. And if you want to, if you try to pitch something to the BBC, on the one hand, you could finish it in a day, but the editorial process involved with doing a piece for the BBC can last a week, and of going back and forth, and you're spending international, you know, money on international calls, and, you know, same thing with the CBC in Canada. I mean, I've done stuff for them, and it's great to work with the Canadian Broadcasting, but again, it's a very lengthy editorial process, and you know, and then you inevitably get into situations where your principles are put in sort of tension with what they want out of a piece. And I didn't even open the Pandora's box when I was in Iraq of trying to report for corporate media, because you know, I wasn't about to, you know, do this Saddam story you know, for the BBC. But it's really hard. I mean, it's tremendously hard to get those kinds of gigs, and they're few and far between. I mean, I was writing for the Sunday Telegraph in London for a while. I mean, I was getting like $2,000 a story for writing, you know, 900 words about nothing. And no, it was incredible. I mean, I all of a sudden I went from like making $8,000 a year to all of a sudden I have this money in my pocket. But then at the end of the day, it's like, I mean, it's a Tory newspaper, and they, just because Tony Blair is in office, they liked criticizing the Kosovo policy. So I'm writing these stories, but eventually though, I got into a big fight with the foreign editor and said, I hate you and I'm not working for you anymore. And, you know, so, I mean, I think all of us are sort of doomed to you know, anytime we cross over. I mean, I'm all for trying to get stuff on NPR if they don't rip it apart. But at the end of the day, you spend a lot of time and it doesn't really kind of pay off. And so it's, you know, it's really tough. And I mean, majority of what I do and everyone in this room does is for free, you know, and I think that that's another thing, that we're not about making the money in our pockets. We have to support our families. But there's also a tremendous network, and with the internet, you know, putting stuff around. I did this Iraq documentary, and we did it for Free Speech Radio News, and then I made the link available to other stations and sent emails around and was encouraging people to take it, and not about money. I didn't get paid anything for that from anyone other than the initial production of it, but Free Speech Radio News encouraged it to move it around. Same thing with IMCs. People can upload stuff, and if you're just starting out with producing pieces, it's a great way to learn. You know, you can try something out by uploading it to a site like the IMC, and it just gives you practice. You can get feedback from a couple of people, and then maybe you're at the point where you want to give Aaron or Frida or Philip a call. But it's a matter of practice and constantly doing things, but it's not the best way in the world to make a living, and that's the reality. So.
I'd just like to encourage everybody here to say a little bit more about those sort of things that you do with your skills to help make these ends meet that aren't producing radio, but that you found are the best way to do it without impacting the work you really want to be doing. You know, Frida said conference recording, and if there's any other just like bright ideas like that, I'd love to hear them.
Totally cynical, but do you know how much people get paid to go to a town and speak the same speech for an hour? Thousands of dollars with student funding. And you could... Me? Yeah, but no, I mean... No, but the amount of money that goes out of our town to speakers coming through is insane, and just tap into the circuit, get an agent. It's, you know, totally cynical, but it is a fortune. We could bring Jeremy, we could bring Philip, we could bring Aaron, and we could bring Frida, and we put big bucks in your pocket. Absolutely. Yes. And a story. You could do work on a story while you're there.
Just to say that just what I was doing before I was producing Free Speech Radio News every day was working 2 days a week for KPFA doing reporting and freelancing for Pacifica, and so that was how I was able to get a living together, except that then I would also try where I felt like I had a story that, you know, was applicable to various other publications, I would pitch there. So I would sometimes do stories for In These Times or some city planning trade journals, because that's just something that I find interesting. Before I was working at KPFA in freelancing, I was teaching religious school in freelancing. I think there's something to be said, because if you don't want to, like, have to do, like, what, you know, and, like, if you want to just do the work that you want to do and try to resell it, it is really, really hard. And so finding a job that is a couple of hours a week that doesn't get in the way. We have a reporter who is a fabulous reporter who works 2 days a week at a secondhand store. You know, it's and especially when you're just starting out, you know, those are really good kind of backups to have.
Yeah, and I think before I came to the National Radio Project, I mean, one of the things was just having as many skills as possible, you know, so running your radio station when there are the occasional fill-in jobs, you know, like the two-hour slot, like in the morning to run the board, or the four-hour, you know, evening slot. I mean, I remember I had the morning news shift on occasion, you know, that starts at 4:30 in the morning. So just having, you know, knowing how to work the board, knowing, you know, how to, you know, do the newscast in the morning, if that's what it is, whatever, just having a wide range of skills. Also connecting with other reporters out in the field and other people doing stuff. I mean, you could pick up easy stuff like you know, so you get paid to do a double ender or a tape sync, you know. So just because I was talking to the person from the CBC and got a phone number and talked, you know, chatted whatever, and then, you know, next thing I know is, like, you know, a couple times I get a phone call from radio programs in Canada, and they say, we need someone, you know, go to this house, tape record this person while they're talking on the phone with us, and send us the tape. So you can pick up, you know, just piecing together a bunch of things. You know, like others have said, trying to sell stories, you know, and sort of maximize on your first effort, it's a tough go to definitely make good money on it. You can make it work. I mean, I got really systematized in the way I was doing it. You know, I'd pick which story is going to work the best for really trying to get, like, the second, third, and fourth version out of it, and have versions already done and ready to go, or at least close to ready to go. So, for example, getting, like, a query letter ready is, like, really not that hard of a thing to do, and you have it all ready to go. What I mean by query letter is a letter, you know, dear editor, and hopefully you know the name of that person, you know. So, dear so-and-so, you know, explaining the gist of your story, having that good first paragraph, second paragraph, who's in the story, all the easy contact information, everything on one sheet of paper, so they just need to look at it and say, okay, I just need to call this phone number here or email this right here. Have it all nice and organized and ready to go, and keep organized and keep track of those things, you know, with follow-up phone calls, write in your calendar, you know, sent query on, you know, September 9th, you know, make a call back on September 14th, you know, and just keep on talking, calling, etc., and having stuff close to ready to go so you can turn them around quickly.
Can I say something? Sure.
Okay, other things you can do. With your equipment, you can do a few things once you get set up. I make some money producing books on tape for people who want to, you know, read their book onto a tape. Another thing that I haven't done. Well, just, I know people who are authors, and they approach me. I mean, I haven't done it systematically. There are also, you know, like, there are a lot of companies doing books on tape. And I once, this has been years ago, had a gig producing a book on tape. It was a book called Answer as a Man by Taylor Caldwell. And it was a 500-page book, and the first thing I had to do was cut it down to a 50-page script. And then recorded it, and then had to go to the studio and mix it and edit it. And actually, I was losing money on that. And I called up the guy who had hired me to do it and said, look, I don't mind doing it for nothing, but I'm not going in the hole over this thing. You've got to kick some more money in. And he was really angry about that, but, you know, he did get it finished. Anyway, so, yeah, you can lose on those deals if you're not careful, but... But there are, you know, professional gigs like that was Time Warner or something like that. Anyhow, those things. Another thing which is sort of marginal, but, you know, like dubbing people's vinyl albums to CD if you have an analog CD recorder. I mean, you know, just things that you might do out or doing live sound mixing for somebody's gig outdoors or, you know, those kind of things where you have some equipment, you can do simple skills. Then there's the whole other area of related skills. I do a fair amount of ghost writing and editing for people, and I also have done from time to time quite a lot of telemarketing for nonprofits and telefundraising. Right? Yeah. And in the last couple of years, I've worked on the census and part time, and I worked for Gallup for a while, just long enough to find out that it's really true how sneaky they are. Well, I don't think I should do that. I think I had to sign something. But I can tell people. Anyway, that's the end of my suggestions. House cleaning.
I'm not even going to start talking about some of the awful part-time jobs I've been working. I just wanted to add that AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio, is a really good resource for some of this. Frieda and I are members, and as is Joshua Cheff, and AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio, that a few of us are members of. You could go to their website, which is airmedia.org, and it's mostly like a lot of people who produce for NPR, but mostly public affairs and documentary producers. And even if you're not a member, if you go to their website, there's a resource of places that list of places that you could pitch to and types of things that they're looking for and how much they pay. Yeah, AIRmedia, AIRmedia.org.
Yeah, they have a mentoring program.
They have a mentoring, yep.
Yeah, it's very helpful, especially if you're trying to get into the
NPR
system.
And also, that's a good place. If you become a member, your name gets listed in this directory, and sometimes someone will look for someone to do a tape sync in, you know, your state or something, so they could find you in the list. And they also have an email listserv, and that's a good place for finding out, you know, job announcements and stuff like that. So,
oh, are there any funding sources other than cleaning toilets, like CPB, or, you know, are there any organizations that fund independent journalism, you know, that'll give you a stipend or that'll give you a grant? Or I hate all of the bureaucracy with that, but if it's available, do you know anything?
CPB does still have a radio program fund. I think they tend to go more towards the larger institutions, although they claim they give a lot to independent producers. I mean, I think you should talk to people at AIR about that and kind of look into it, because they have a very mainstream bias. I mean, beyond mainstream, and and so it can be. NFCB doesn't have any grant programs that I know of. Does anybody else know any other? Robeson Fund, yeah, does have production grants. That's the only one I know in radio. There are other like radical. When you look at content, like if you want to do content about population and population control issues, there's a lot of money out there for that kind of stuff. I mean, if you're willing to narrow down to the content, if you want to do gay issues, there's money out there, you know, from funds who focus on that. So, yeah, I mean, you can piece it together that way. But just in terms of supporting good radio journalists, I mean, you'd be more likely to get money if you were in TV or in print even than in radio. And we were talking, some of us were talking the other yesterday about needing to start an overall radio fund, something that's not under CPB's control, where we could go and get these kinds of grants.
Just to say something additional about that. One thing that we have been able to do through our nonprofit status at Free Speech Radio News is for a number of reporters who have wanted to raise money through grants for their own work to just be like a clearinghouse for them. You know, and a number of reporters working on special projects are our coverage from East Timor, for example, that Deepa did. We have a reporter who's in France doing a story about female genital mutilation in France that's funded by a grant, and so we can just be helpful if you're thinking of doing something like that. To give a call and just kind of we can, if you're going to do stories for free speech, we can put the organization behind it.
I have another thing. There is an organization that's just getting a 501c3. It's called the Women's Radio Fund. And they have a website, and it's, you know, it's like just coming together, but the idea is that you could put up on the website what you were interested in doing, and that funders would look at the website cruising for things that they wanted to fund. So it's like a showcase place. No, this is not a Genevieve Vaughn. This is a Dorothy Abbott, formerly of WMNF.
What's the website? Radiofund.org. Yeah.
I've got two questions. When you interview these people and then the product, let's say, sold, can they come back and say, I want to share a piece of that? Do you talk to them? Do you have them sign something? Or do they have any rights in that? That's one question. Second one is, what's the best way to give you the product? Is it uploading to your site? Is it literally putting it in the mailbox? What is the best way?
Well, first of all, yeah, as far as rights goes, it is, recommended that people you interview sign off and waive all rights to that and say, I give you permission to do this interview and use the tape, da 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 da. We have at times been really systematized and actually had such a form and we had people sign off. For the most part, I mean, my understanding of it is that it's implied that they are doing that when they grant the interview. You know, you're in trouble if you know, you're like kind of miking someone and they don't really know and then they hear their voice and then they may call you on it, you know. But for the most part, it's an implied waive of rights, and so it's ours to use, you know. As far as submitting to us, most people submit by FedEx, you know, send us a CD or a mini disc of their material, and we receive it, you know, by FedEx. Occasionally, if it's an international report, most often with the international stuff, it does come through FTP or through the internet, and they do some uploads to our servers.
Yeah, in terms of the rights, in particular with speeches, generally you need to get some kind of permission. And the permission may come from the person who paid for the speech, or it may come or from the speaker, or both. When we're dealing with speeches by activists, usually there's not any problem. They're there to get that information out, and so they're happy for you to be there. But of course, you want to acknowledge to the person that you're going to be there recording. In terms of... of delivering the thing, suddenly MP3 FTP of MP3 has become my favorite. It's so cheap, it's so fast, and you know, like I can email or call somebody and say, oh hey, you forgot to put your closing tag, you know, they can get it back to me in 20 minutes. It's fabulous. I love it. So I want to encourage everybody to, you know, get that cable modem if you can possibly afford it, you know, get the access and do that, because I mean, it's very expensive to do all this FedExing, and I mean, we do have a FedEx. I mean, if you've got something really hot and we really want it, we'll pay the FedEx shipping, but rather not. So there's the mail, and CDs, DATs, mini discs, cassettes. We'll take open reel, even. We'll take anything.
Yeah,
One thing about recording speeches, Frieda reminded me, is that if sometimes the venue is needs some sort of sign-off, or you need to get a sign-off from the venue. Like, for example, the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco, they're really particular, or the World Affairs Council, the bigger sort of institutions that have the big speakers come into town, like you know, former Secretary of State or Dick Cheney, you know, something like that, you know. When they're coming in, you want to make sure you get
signed.
Right? And you still need to get permission, though, to...
There would be no Free Speech Radio News if it weren't for MP3 technology, and I can state that as a fact. Because when we all went on strike with no studios at all or anything, I think all the time, like, how did they do news before computers? I have no idea at all. What did they, well, I mean, that part I get, but, like, how did Pacifica, like, get stories from, like, the Middle East and Africa and Asia and Europe and South America and Detroit and California? Then they did in Washington, and part of the reason was that they sucked, but part of the reason was that, it's just a cost that you can't afford to bear, and the reporters, like, when we get, stories out of Nigeria, that is one place that we have to mail from because the internet service is not good enough. And we do bundle like three, wait until we have like three stories to send because it costs $120 or something to send a courier mini disc from Nigeria. And we pay $150 for the story. So what? We said it FedEx, yeah, from Nigeria. Yeah, sometimes we use DHL. We use FedEx from Nigeria. We have a DHL account and a FedEx account. But yeah, I mean, we definitely prefer MP3, and we will take it mixed and unmixed depending on what the reporter is interested in. And, we'll do voiceovers if you have people speaking in languages other than English, if you can't find English speakers where you are. We find actually most of our reporters, it's very interesting actually, I was looking at this a while back, you can almost tell which countries have legitimate banking systems by where our reporters want to get paid. Many, many reporters, so-and-so is in, India, but they want their check sent to their relative who lives in France. With the reporters that we have where that's not an option, we mail checks, just the regular mail, or sometimes we wire money, and then depending on the circumstance, sometimes we bear the cost of the wire, and sometimes we require the reporter to bear the cost of the wire. The only way we're able to pay people in Argentina right now is through Western Union, because the banking system is so screwed up. So.
Yeah, I have a question about material in translation and how you like to receive that, how you like it to be mixed down, and I have.
Well, it just depends. There's a couple of different things. One is, if you've got somebody who was speaking with a translator and it's broken up into nice little bits, we can just have both. And sometimes if the original language just goes too long, we kind of just have it start. And I like actually usually to have it fade out to nothing. And the reason is because of the same reason of that we're on shortwave, and stuff. It just makes too much confusion. So... it just depends. It really does. You just got to kind of see what you have to work with, and how clear each one is, and The thing is that the parts that we want to have in the original language are the, either it's very clear at the beginning, if there's something passionate, you want to hear it because there's a quality in the voice that's,
it's art.
because we have a similar style, you know, I'd like to hear some of the language for a little while just to get a sense of where the person's coming from, their emotions and their voice and everything, and run that for maybe 10 seconds and then bring it down to a bed and then make it disappear as well. Yeah. Actually, for a while, we were still keeping it at a bed level, you know, just to kind of have it back there, but just too many people call him and say, why, you know, why you forget? We had one guy call up who was super angry about that, actually. Yeah, really mad, you know.
Because he couldn't understand.
Yeah, because he couldn't understand. He thought we were trying to play games with him or something, you know. He gets weird phone calls like that sometimes. No, it's all mono anyway, yeah.
We're being told to wrap up, but I don't know if there's anything that anyone really wants to ask about or add at this time.
That I really appreciate. I'm sorry Jeremy left, but I really appreciated the context that he gave for the whole thing and the thought of, I think this, I don't, the way to kind of maybe organize that thing where there's so many incredible people all over who are willing and very talented, and it'd be wonderful to have some, the Grassroots Radio Coalition could be some kind of organizing possibility for the kind of thing he was talking about above and beyond each one of your organizations. I don't know that context, but I just think it's a thought and a really creative idea, and it's something that's really needed these days.
Just really quickly, one thing that we can do at Free Speech is that if you have a particular interest, to try to buddy you up with a reporter who may have more experience and be interested in similar things.
I just wanted to also let people know of Independent Native News, which is also... Okay, so people know of that. And National Native News is carried through PRI, and Independent Native News is like, you know, you download it from their site. Independent Native News, and they're, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I produce for them. Latino USA. So Independent Native News is nativevoice.org, and they love, they're really good coaching people who are new and everything. Independent Native News. Oh, there's National Native News, which I've pitched to them, and they're like really rude, and I don't know. I don't really like them. Yeah, like Independent Native News came out of National Native News because they had problems.
What's the Native Voice?
Just nativevoice.org.
I just wanted to bring up really quickly, somebody mentioned benefits, health coverage, and that sort of thing. There are a few options for freelancers. You have to meet certain qualifications, but AFTRA, the American Federation of Television Radio Artists, there are others like NABED with CWA and so forth, National Association of, I should know this, but I don't, but it's a branch of CWA for like radio professionals. You know, I mean, you have to pay dues, and there are some premiums, but it's usually a lot better than just, you know, trying to get a health plan off the street. So that's something to keep in mind. And plus, you know, you do have a little bit of some of the benefits that, you know, come with being in a union. NABED and NABED and AFTRA in particular. In fact, I think AFTRA has probably the best plan. It's the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists.
That's why I didn't get it before.
There's a bunch of other shows also. There's a show called Common Ground, which is produced out of South Dakota, which is dedicated to international peace. And there's a bunch of other programs. I just refer you again to what Scott was talking about. On the AIR website, they have a pitch page, which includes most of these news outlets and just like a little summary of what each of them are about. So it's a good...
I'm really thinking we should... There isn't a GRC website, which I really think there should be. There's going to be, okay, because we should definitely put up a lot of this. We should put up a lot of this info about places to pitch to. I know you were talking about a lot of your foreign correspondents, of contact people, sort of more radical producers within mainstream organizations, places to pitch to, info about insurance, and I forget what the other issue we brought up was. like an air pitch show. That's actually out of date, though. And there's other shows that I know GRC people are interested in pitching to that probably wouldn't necessarily make it on the air list. So, yeah, I think we should definitely suggest that.